There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Glad you're here. And lots to do on today's show. We'll take you to Washington. A little bit more of the performance art going on with questioning of the president's nominee for the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh. I think Dick Durbin is questioning right now. We'll get to that in a second. But I do want to do a little update weather-wise here, because I know that Gordon, now a depression, seems to be in the rear view for a lot of us. But if you're still getting rain out there, yeah, that's courtesy of what was Tropical Storm Gordon. And if you're in Baldwin County, you're getting it. Some areas, southern Mobile County getting it. Northwest Mobile County getting it. Getting flooding. North Baldwin County getting flash flooding. I know Bay Minette, some flooding up in that area. Down at Orange Beach, it looks like there, even Gulf Shores getting some of it, but Orange Beach getting it worse there to the east. Daphne looks like into Spanish Fort getting it as well, as this rain continues to train across these areas. It continues to rain basically in the same place, already saturated soil. And, of course, with that, you get the flooding. Active alert right now for coastal flooding. National Weather Service in Mobile issued that coastal flood advisory remains in effect till 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coastal flooding with 2 to 3 feet above normally dry ground. That is storm surge. We saw some of that with the high tide this morning in places like Dolphin Island. Also, you have this flash flooding and the chance of that in these areas where it continues to rain in the same place. These showers and thunderstorms are training over the area, could drop an additional 2 to 4 inches today, and maybe localized amounts up to 6 inches. This would be Florida, Northwest Florida, Florida Panhandle, Baldwin County, and to some degree later on into Mobile County. But right now the big watch is for Baldwin County and Northwest Florida. So we'll keep our eyes on this. More from Dr. Bill coming up at the bottom of the hour, like at 12:35. We'll talk a little more about that with him. Also coming up, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. He's going to join us, talk about a little bit what's going on in Washington today and how it reflects on Alabama, and the latest on the gubernatorial stakes as we move forward to that November general election. And, you know, we got to get into this, too. Not only will you be voting on people, but you'll also be voting on ballot amendments come November. We'll get into that a little bit as well. Now, if we can, let's go to a little bit of the Q&A. This is Dick Durbin, and I think right now, right now we have Brett Kavanaugh speaking.
Policy is then consistent with Supreme Court precedent. There are two things to look at in this context, Senator. First, is the government's goal reasonable in some way? And they say, we want the minor to have the opportunity to consult about the abortion. Well, the Supreme Court precedent specifically says that that's an appropriate objective. The second question is the delay, your point. And the parental consent cases of the Supreme Court recognize that there could be some delay because of the parental consent procedures. And in fact, Justices Marshall, Brennan, and Blackmun repeatedly dissented in cases because they thought the delay was too long. I quoted all that in my Garza opinion, and I made clear it had to happen very quickly. And I looked at the time of the pregnancy to make sure I specifically talk about safety. I specifically say the government cannot use this as a ruse to somehow prevent the abortion. I spent a paragraph talking about she was in an undeniably difficult situation. So as I was saying to Senator Graham earlier, I tried to recognize the real world effects on her. I said, consider the circumstances. She's a 17-year-old by herself in a foreign country, in a facility where she's detained, and she has no one to talk to, and she's pregnant. Now, that is a difficult situation, and I specifically recognized and tried to understand that. And then as a judge, not the policymaker, I tried to understand whether the government's policy was consistent with the Supreme Court's precedents. And I did the best I could. And I said on those parental consent precedents, I said, look, some people disagree with those precedents and think those kinds of statutes should not be allowed. But I had to, precedent's not like a cafeteria where I can take this but not that. I had to take Casey completely. Casey reaffirmed Roe.
I have some other questions, so okay. I ask if you please.
Well, it's an important question, though,
it's
and I want to make sure.
It's a critical question.
And I did my level best in a emergency posture, so I had basically 2 days to do this case.
2-1 unbanked decision, which you dissented from, correct?
I did the best to follow precedent. And as I always try to do, to be as careful as I can in following the precedent of the Supreme Court.
So, let me ask you a personal question. What's the dirtiest, hardest job you've ever had in your life?
I worked construction when I was after I was 16 for a summer, 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. My dad dropped me off every morning at 7. 6:55. He wanted me to be early, that's probably the one. I also, I should say, Senator, I had one person, I guess, is lawn business for many summers. Business, I cut a lot of lawns, and that's how I made some cash. I started that probably eighth grade. Maybe seventh grade. I cut my parents' lawn, but then I cut a lot of lawns in the neighborhood and actually distributed flyers to all over the place to say, if you need your lawn cut, call me. So lawn cutting and then the construction job the one summer.
My dirtiest job I ever had was 4 summers working in a slaughterhouse.
Yes.
I always wanted to go back to college.
Yes.
I couldn't wait to get out of there. It was unbearable. It was dirty. It was hot. The things I did were unimaginable, and I wouldn't even start to repeat them. Then came a case before you called Agriprocessor Company versus NLRB. At least a third of the workers, Judge Kavanaugh, in our nation's slaughterhouses are immigrants. It stands visits to Iowa or Illinois, probably Delaware, you pick it. You're going to find a lot of immigrants doing these miserable, dirty, stinking, hot jobs. Many of them are undocumented. The work is low paid and dangerous. And as the GAO has noted, immigrants are pressured not to even report injuries on the job. Agriprocessor's case was a notorious meatpacking company owned by Shalom Rabashkin, who was convicted of 86 counts of fraud and money laundering in 2009. His 27-year sentence recently was commuted by President Trump. Agriprocessors had at the core of its business model the exploitation of undocumented workers. Half their workers, almost 400 of them, were not authorized. Workers alleged the company fostered a hostile workplace environment that included 12-hour shifts without overtime pay, exposure to dangerous chemicals, sexual harassment, and child labor. A truck driver at Agriprocessor's Brooklyn warehouse told reporters, quote, "We were treated like garbage, and if we said anything, we got fired immediately." Judge Kavanaugh, you bent over backwards to take the company's side against these workers. In a 2008 D.C. Circuit case, Agriprocessor versus NLRB, your dissent argued that this company's workers should be prohibited from unionizing because they did not fit your definition of an employee. To reach this conclusion, you imported a definition of employee from a totally different statute. You ignored the plain language of the controlling statute, the National Labor Relations Act, which has a broad definition of employee, as well as binding Supreme Court precedent. The majority in this case, and you were a dissenter, the majority in this case noted that their opinion stuck to the text of the National Labor Relations Act and to the 1986 Immigration Reform and Control Act, which did not amend the National Labor Relations Act. They said that your dissent, these other judges said about your dissent, would, quote, abandon the text of the controlling statute and lead to a, quote, absurd result. The majority in this decision included one Republican and one Democratic appointed judge. Judge Kavanaugh, you claim over and over again to be a textualist, to be carefully weighing every word of a statute.
Yes.
So why did you go out of your way to interpret the word employee in a way that benefited this horrible business and disadvantaged these exploited workers? Why didn't you stick to the plain language of the controlling statute and the binding Supreme Court precedent?
Because the Supreme Court precedent compelled me to reach the results that I reached. And here's why, Senator. Let me explain. The Supreme Court had a case in 1984 called the Shertan decision. And the Shertan decision considered the interaction of the National Labor Relations Law Act and the immigration laws. And what the Supreme Court did in Shertan is had this question and said it is at that time permissible to consider an immigrant unlawfully in the country as an employee under the National Labor Relations Act. And in part 2B of the opinion, you have to read part 2B of the opinion, of the Supreme Court's opinion. If you read part 2B of the opinion, the court then goes on to say, and because the immigration laws do not prohibit employment of people unlawfully in the country, and makes clear, the Supreme Court makes clear, this is when it's being considered in Congress in 84, it ends up in the 86 Act. The court makes clear, as I read part 2B, and I think I'm correct on this, that if the immigration laws did prohibit employment of someone here unlawfully in the country, then that would also mean that they can't vote in the union election. So what I was doing there, Senator, it's all about precedent. I read that, and if you look at the dissenting opinion, I really parsed this very carefully, and I went deep into this case. So I went back and pulled the, from the Shertan case, I went and asked for the Marshall papers, Thurgood Marshall papers from the library to read all the memos that went back and forth among the justices in the Shertan case. I cited the oral argument to make sure that what I was reading in there was actually reflected what had been going on in the Supreme Court. And it is quite clear from the oral argument, they were aware that the immigration law was about to be changed, and they were aware of the interaction between the labor law and the immigration law. So I think I stand by what I wrote then, and I think I correctly analyzed part 2B. Now, Senator, if the Supreme Court's Shertan opinion had ended at part 2A, 100% would agree with you, and my decision would have been different.
Well, let me You said earlier today you don't get to pick and choose which Supreme Court precedent you follow. The majority in agriprocessors' case was following Supreme Court precedent. In the Shertan case, the Supreme Court, a 7-2 decision, said that undocumented immigrants are employees under the National Labor Relations Act. I quote, since undocumented aliens are not among the few groups of workers expressly exempted by Congress, they plainly come within the broad statutory definition of employee. That's a quote from the case.
But that's part 2A. You got to go to part 2B.
Well, let me hang on. Let me tell you some people who went to both parts and couldn't disagree with you more. Everyone else who looked at this question, the administrative law judge, the National Labor Relations Board, including Republican appointees, two appeals court judges, including one Republican appointee, followed the Supreme Court precedent and came to the opposite conclusion that you did. I understand you may have preferred the Shertan dissent, but you failed to follow Supreme Court precedent. This was a case where the National Labor Relations Act included those who were undocumented who could unionize to protect themselves in the workplace. You went out of your way to dissent all the way along and make sure they didn't, or in your view, not have that right, that they did not have that right to unionize.
I very respectfully disagree, Senator. And the reason I disagree is that the Supreme Court did say that the immigrant was covered under the definition of NLRA. If it ends there, I'm with you 100%. But then the Supreme Court goes on to say, and we consider also in resolving this question the conflict between the National Labor Relations Act and the immigration laws, and makes clear, as I read it, if the immigration laws had made employment of someone here in the country unlawfully illegal, then that would be prohibited in the case. And I went back, like I said, if you look at Justice, I quote the oral argument transcript from Shertan in my dissenting opinion. I had no I have no agenda in any direction on the, I'm a judge. So I'm just trying to resolve the precedent.
Well, let me just close. Let me close by saying this. I'm just a judge. I just follow precedent. Gosh, we've heard that so often, and I hope it's the case, but we know that there's much more to the, to your job than that.
I agree.
The fact that you were a dissenter and everyone else saw this the other way should give us pause when you say, I'm just following precedent.
Well, I respectfully, Senator, that opinion, I'm proud of that opinion because I think it carefully details the law in that case. I'm following the Supreme Court precedent. And to your point that other judges disagree, I'll just, there was a case I had about 10 years ago or 8 years ago called Papagno. It was a case where I ruled in favor of a criminal defendant on a restitution matter. Every other court beforehand disagreed. I wrote the majority opinion with Judge Edwards and Judge Griffith. Every other court after us disagreed. Finally got to the Supreme Court this year in the Lagos case, and it was, they agreed with our one opinion, the Papagno opinion. Just to point out that just because other courts of appeals might have disagreed does not necessarily mean we were necessarily wrong, because the Supreme Court ultimately decides that. I understand your question. I appreciate them. Thank you.
Senator Cornyn and...
All right, so there you go. A little bit of what's happening in Washington as they continue with the grandstanding and the everybody getting their licks in on the Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Coming back, we'll talk get a little more information here about some flooding issues for Baldwin County, and then Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News, all straight ahead this hour.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, that's good news. Thank you, Dalton. And Dalton, I'll be letting people know on our text line as well. The streaming that was down this morning is back up. Oddly enough, yeah, and y'all were very, let me use the term here, y'all are very chill about it. You're like, oh, I understand with the storm. Weird thing is our streaming provider that's out on the West Coast was having the issues with our stream that goes to FMTalk1065.com, also goes to the TuneIn radio app. That stream, the West Coast provider had messed. It wasn't even anything on our end. But they've now finally woken up or done whatever they need to do out there. And so the feed, if you had the issue like so many of y'all today, getting it on TuneIn Radio or through the website, it's back and we're good to go. And that is great, great news. All right, look here. Just playing a little bit of the confirmation hearing going on and listening to the questions by Durbin and the answers by Kavanaugh. And again, a lot of y'all on the text line saying he's pretty good. Yeah, Brett Kavanaugh is no slouch in that position. I see here our buddy Quinn Hillier also wants to chime in on this. Hey, Quinn.
Hey, Sean. Look, I'll try to keep this short. One of the biggest bits of fireworks from the hearings earlier today was when Senator Leahy was asking Kavanaugh whether Kavanaugh had somehow been in receipt of so-called stolen emails from the Democrats back in the early 2000s from the Senate Democratic staff that my friend Manny Miranda had leaked to the Wall Street Journal. And somehow, you know, wondering if Kavanaugh was complicit in the, quote, theft of the emails, which he, by the way, was not. That's the answer to that. But the interesting little nugget is the reason the Democrats were so upset about the theft of the emails is that what was in the emails was that they had filibustered for the first time ever to filibuster a judicial nominee. They had filibustered nominee Miguel Estrada, not because he was not qualified, but because the emails among the Democratic staffers to their senators said, we have to block him because he is young, Latino, and a possibility for the Supreme Court. Ooh. And talk about ethnic bigotry. They did not want Republicans to get credit for having a Latino candidate for the Supreme Court.
Who was saying it?
The Democratic staffers and senators. I forgot which one of them.
I mean, there are actual names attached to it, like it'd be this person signed off?
Yes, exactly. That was 13, 14 years ago. So now I don't remember which staffer and which senator, but it was Durbin's staff and Kennedy's staff sending a message to the senators saying the leftist groups say it's really important to block Miguel Estrada because he is a young Latino and a possibility for the Supreme Court. They did not want Republicans to make inroads with Latinos, so they blocked the qualified nominee. So even though Kavanaugh had nothing to do with it and Leahy was way off base, the interesting backstory is 14 years later, they're still sensitive about it because the email showed how bigoted they are and how they look at everything by ethnicity, not by qualification.
Well, that's actually, they and they look at that's true, and the idea is, God forbid somebody have an ethnicity that they feel like should be their province and have a different thought pattern.
Exactly, yeah. And again, that was a direct quote because he is young and Latino and a possibility for the Supreme Court.
Man, things I wish they would have said about me one day, days past. Quinn, thank you, man. I'm up against a break, but we will, if people want to get more on this and more details, you putting something up on your Twitter feed?
In several hours, you can probably see it as something called Liberty Headline.
Okay, very good. We'll check it out. We'll keep an eye on that feed and post it up when it comes our way. Thank you, Quinn. 12:30, coming back, I'll be joined by Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News. Lots to talk about from Washington to Montgomery and all kind of stuff in between.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, Dalton, remind me, man. Next time we see our buddy Randy Bergen from Southern Fairways Golf Show to just gig him a little bit. Repertoire. He didn't just say repertoire. Repertoire. Very fancy. I would guess maybe a French minor in college or something. Randy, defend yourself, man. Let me know. All right, 1235 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. They're still dealing with the showers associated with now Tropical Depression Gordon. It's raining pretty steadily here at our studios. Baldwin County, y'all have been getting a bunch of the rain today. While it was more of a Mobile County issue yesterday, and obviously Dauphin Island at the center of that, Baldwin County getting a bunch of the rain today. I've got a list, and there's a big list. We can link them up on our social media pages where there's flooding. But these were of interest as well. So if you live or have a second home or something to that effect along a couple rivers in Baldwin County, they are calling for a crest this afternoon around 3 o'clock on a couple. Styx River expected to be 17 feet with moderate to severe flooding by 3 o'clock this afternoon. That's Styx River. Fish River in Silver Hill expected to reach 12 feet by 3 o'clock this afternoon. And over on the Perdido River, it doesn't say that, but it's Barano Park, which is on the Perdido, right? Yeah. Barano Park expected to, that's got to be the, let's just say, I'll add to their note here. Perdido River at Barano Park expected to reach 17.3 feet by 3 p.m. So coming up this afternoon, a crest on three different rivers in Baldwin County. If you've got property or issues there, make sure you're checking into those levels. All right, 1237 FM Talk 106.5, and good to talk to our buddy Todd Stacey with the Alabama Daily News and check in on a couple different things, Washington and Montgomery in the mix. Hey, Todd.
Glad to know everybody made it through okay.
Yeah, we're fine. I mean, that's just, you know, this is kind of a party storm when we get a tropical storm, but it still does, you know, a little damage down on Dauphin Island, and people are, you know, have issues with some flooding now with the rain. But yeah, we're good. I appreciate you thinking about us. And yeah, actually, you posted up information in your mailer this morning about us, so I felt good.
Well, when I see people actually swimming in the surf, I figure it's not too bad of a threat. So
yes, well, I mean, there's always those people, you know, that say we never get any surf around here, so let's go surfing right there by the storm. That's just, it's just one of those things. We can't help it. All right, a bunch to talk about here. I guess as a storm is happening, you know, here at home, there's also a storm going on in Washington, and I'm not even talking about the Kavanaugh proceedings. I'm talking about this book, Fear, that's due out, I guess, next week on Tuesday, Bob Woodward's book about the Trump White House. And yeah, you detailed this in your email this morning.
It sent shockwaves throughout Washington yesterday. It really did. Everybody knew that Woodward was working on a book, and this is something he does a lot, right? Every administration, I think since Clinton, he's written, I think, at least two books on. He probably did three during Bush 43. But this is something that Bob Woodward does. He spends years sometimes interviewing people, going and getting sources to sort of get the inside scoop. If you remember, he did a really, one of his famous ones was Bush at War. I actually really enjoyed that book because it kind of gave the inside look at, you know, what it was like in the run-up to the Iraq War. And it wasn't really all that negative. It was pretty, you know, positive. But he does this every time, and here's his Trump take, which, of course, I mean, it's predictable. It's going to be negative. It's going to be hard-hitting. And some of the excerpts started coming out yesterday, and boy, I mean, this goes way beyond just some revealing tidbits into an administration. This is, you know, if it is to be believed, you know, senior administration people saying pretty terrible things about the president and about his leadership.
I'm seeing that here, Todd. But and that caveat there of if it's to be believed, or as I said, you know, if this is true, these assertions made in the book, if they are true, then we move forward. And I have to put the caveat in there, but then I have people come up and say, what are you saying that for? We're talking about Bob Woodward. We're talking about a guy that's got the journalistic chops. We have a guy, and like you pointed out, has written these books. It's, you know, he kept doing things even after Watergate, that he's written these things about every administration going forward for, like you said, about 20 years plus. I don't know. I mean, in today's world, I always have this kind of issue that I feel like I'm being fed a line one way or another. Mm-hmm. But I do have to put that preface there if it's to be believed. And if it is, there's so much to talk about. But you know me, I'm a homer, and I'm focused on this right here, as President Trump is quoted as saying about Attorney General Jeff Sessions, this guy is mentally retarded. He's this dumb Southerner. He couldn't even be a one-person country lawyer down in Alabama. Now, that part of it is interesting to me because that's not just a take on Jeff Sessions, which, listen, there's a lot of people in Alabama that seem to be big fans of then-Senator Sessions that are now calling for him to be gone as AG, but it also takes a shot at our state.
Oh, yeah, and it also fits a pattern. You know, you remember last week there was a report out of the president criticizing Sessions' accent and his educational background.
Right.
He, you know, Sessions went to Huntington College here in Montgomery, and he went to University of Alabama Law School, two really great institutions, but it's not Ivy League. And Trump was reported mocking that and saying it. He talks like he has marbles in his mouth. Well, I guess we all do if you compared to, you know, the Midwesterners or something. But, you know, so when you look back at those comments from a week ago that were reported a week ago, and then, you know, these reported comments, it makes it a little more plausible. And I'm with you on the Woodward thing. I mean, that's why I put that caveat in there. Who knows? I mean, I've read his books before, and I've always appreciated his reporting. There was only one book that I sort of knew whether some of it was right or wrong, and he was on the money. But I'm with you. I mean, that's why I said today, you know, there are tapes out there, and I'd really like to hear the tapes this time because, you know, you've got just two sides in this war, you know, for and against Trump. And, you know, when the stakes are this high, I'd really like to hear the audio.
Yeah.
When it comes to Sessions, you know, it kind of fits a pattern of, you know, he's obviously down on the attorney general. He doesn't like Sessions right now. But we've heard this before about him attacking his Southern heritage, his Southern accent, things like that. So I don't know. It sounds kind of plausible to me. And you're starting to see Sessions' colleagues in the Senate, including Senator Shelby, defend him, come to his defense.
Defend Sessions, right?
Yes, right. Yeah, come to Sessions' defense. Shelby, matter of fact, yesterday was very quick to come to his defense to say, hey, I talk like that too. And, you know, to say that, look, Trump wouldn't be president if it wasn't for the South, you know. And so I was glad to see Senator Shelby come to his old colleague's defense. And now you're starting to see a lot more Alabama politicians speak out a little bit to say, hey, this is a little beyond the pale here. We're, you know, attack his job as attorney general, you know, say he should do this or do that as in his job, but come on, don't dog the South. Don't dog Alabama.
Right.
That's not cool.
Yeah, and then this is the part, this is where I'm just, I really want to know what the truth is. Like, well, in everything, I would like to know what the truth is. But if this is true, like you said, I think the demarcation is, and I spend a lot of time on here defending Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. But at the same time, you could say that's a specific criticism of Jeff Sessions. But in what is reported here two different times, whether it's a impugning of the universities he attended or the fact that he, wouldn't even be a one-person country lawyer down in Alabama, both of those dismissive of the South. And like Senator Shelby said, without the South, he wouldn't be president of the United States. And if it is true, it gives me the vibe of somebody who is like, oh, yeah, I'm only friends with that guy because his parents have a pool. And, you know, somebody quotes him on that and tells the guy with the pool that, hey, that guy's only hanging out with you because your parents have a pool.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you ever saw the old movie, the old Andy Griffith movie, A Face in the Crowd, where old Lonely Rhodes is a country performer who goes around the country just thrilling audiences with his straight talk. He just tells it like it is. And then he gets a hot mic moment where people hear him for the first time denouncing them as rubes and, you know, saying he got one over on them. And that's when the crowd starts turning on him. That's kind of what I see here. I mean, look, I don't think the country, I especially don't think the state, is turning on Trump with this. I think it would take a lot more. But he needs to be careful, because if there is audio of this, if there is proof that he has denigrated the South, denigrated Alabama, I mean, I would take that personally.
Yeah,
I try to look at things very fairly, but I mean, that'd make me mad.
Yeah, you feel like you were being used. I mean,
you've been had, yeah. and Southerners, you know, we reach a breaking point on that, and for a New Yorker like he is to think I got one over on those rubes. Yeah, I really think that could reach a breaking point in Alabama. I think it would take a lot. I really do. And one reason is, I don't think people really attach themselves necessarily to the personality of Trump or really even what he does. It is, hey, it's us versus them. It is us, conservatives, Republicans, whatever you want to call it, versus the rest of the country, the liberals. You know, we're trying to turn the country around. And so, you know, there have been many behavior problems out of Trump that he has gone far beyond what you know, good church-going people here would ever accept. But it's more of a tribal us versus them thing. So, I don't know. It remains to be seen whether an attack of this nature, you know, mocking the South, mocking Alabama, would even make a dent.
Now, yeah, that is another question. And to be fair here, too, there has been denial of this, of what is quoted, not just specifically that, but all the, you know, impugning parts of this book have been denied by the president and members of his administration. They've written letters and said they didn't do it, right? I mean, so they...
That's right. And, I mean, this is the one part of the book, of the excerpts that were released, the one part that Trump himself is categorically denying. He came out on Twitter, I guess it was late last night or early this morning, saying, I did not say that about Sessions, and I did not say that about the South, which is interesting to me. I mean, he sort of generally denied the other parts, that, hey, these interviews didn't take place, this is all made up. But he specifically and categorically went to the Sessions in Alabama comments, and I think there's a reason for that. I think he understands that you can't, you can't just attack a people, attack a culture like that and get away with it. I mean, there were many parts of this book, or you know, what we've seen so far, that he will probably have a problem with and deny and all that kind of stuff. But he came out specifically and said, "Hey, I didn't say that," because I think he knows how we might react.
Yeah, and what about this? Is there, I always like to look at the aftermath here, and I wonder, is there a specific tool available? Let's say you were quoted in that Woodward book. I mean, is there any protection from, libel in this? Is there, because you're an elected official, is there some reason that he could quote that this elected official said something and Woodward wouldn't be open to a libel suit? I mean...
Woodward is absolutely, against. I mean, he is open to libel suits, just like any journalist or writer. For public officials, to include the president and all those people that are quoted, You have to. There is a higher standard because you're a public official or a national figure, a public figure.
Right.
You have to prove actual malice, and that is a very high standard. You have to prove that not only were you misquoted or misinterpreted, but that the person doing that intentionally meant to harm you with that. That's a very high standard. That's why libel suits, involving public officials very rarely go forward. I mean, the big cases sometimes do because they do. They prove actual malice. And in this case, I mean, it's very hard to prove that because it's just a book. And it's just he's just telling a story, not trying to say, somebody committed a crime or anything like that. So it's a high standard to meet. But the president did today tweet out that, hey, maybe we need to change those libel laws and make it easier to sue somebody for, libel, for saying things that aren't true. But I think he needs to be careful there, because the same First Amendment that protects Bob Woodward protects him from being able to say what he wants on Twitter. And surely there's plenty of things that people might have a problem with the president saying about them on Twitter. So, the First Amendment kind of cuts both ways.
Yes, it does. So, yeah. if only Omarosa was around to have recorded those conversations. We'll come back more with Todd Stacey with the Alabama Daily News. Talk about what's coming up in November. No, I'm not talking about the Iron Bowl. I'm talking about the general election and quite a few people and names out there that are going to be on your ballot.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:52, FM Talk 106.5. Continue our conversation with Todd Stacey with the Alabama Daily News. Alabama Daily News, actually aldailynews.com. And people want to get the newsletter. I do dig that in my inbox. How do they sign up for it?
Yeah, it's real easy. It's just aldailynews.com. You can click subscribe right there on the homepage. You just sign up with your name and email, and every morning you'll get the daily news to your inbox. We go through just the five top stories plus, a news digest of what all is going on. We have front pages from around the state and headlines from all kinds of different outlets. I try to have a pretty balanced view of how everything's looking, and it's just a daily dose of what's happening in Alabama and Washington, D.C.
All right. You mentioned there, too, that it's post-Labor Day, signaling the end of summer and the beginning of campaign season. Lots to talk about here. Kind of lay out to us what you're watching.
Well, obviously, there's the state races. We've got the race for governor. We've got all of the constitutional officers and the state legislature. Thing is, Sean, I don't see many surprises happening. I think Governor Ivey is going to win pretty handily. I don't see really any surprises happening down ballot either. Probably the closest race for statewide is Chief Justice, where Tom Parker faces Robert Vance. But Tom Parker is in legal theory and everything very close to Roy Moore. But he's not nearly the public figure that would, generate so much, opposition like Roy Moore would. So that may be the closest one, but still, I expect Republicans to lock arms, run as a team, and really win this thing. There may be some Democratic hope for a couple of legislative seats, especially some open seats. There are a few in North Alabama, one where that has been a Democratic seat for generations, the Republicans won for the first time last time. That's the Larry Stutz seat. A very popular Democrat is running in that seat and has a good chance to pick it up. And an independent, former Democrat, independent Craig Ford up in the Gadsden area has a strong chance of winning that seat. That's a current open Republican seat. So other than that, I see Republicans continuing to dominate the state legislature. There may be a few seats here and there that get flipped, but the real story is there are going to be a lot of new faces. At least 25 in the House and 10 in the Senate.
Is it right? I heard somebody said a third of the legislature turns over.
Just about, yeah. Right at a third, I think. So we'll have at least 35 new faces. That means 25 in the Senate. I'm sorry, 25 in the House and 10 in the Senate. That's a lot, just considering. And that's That's not counting incumbents that might get beat. Those are just open seats. So a lot of new faces. I think that's good. You know, a lot of people talk about term limits. You know, sometimes term limits are kind of natural because people get tired of these jobs. You know, they don't pay a lot. It takes them away from their real jobs. So there's a lot of retirements going on. And so a lot of new blood in the legislature, which I think can be a good thing. But it'll be interesting to see. You know, they're going to start this next term with, you know, a lot of brand new people to Montgomery, and they get a lot of issues to tackle, like the infrastructure stuff. I mean, we really need to fix roads and bridges. There's always education issues and things like that. So, and of course, you know, gambling, the lottery, mm-hmm. you know, casinos, the sports betting stuff. So a bunch of new blood in Montgomery is going to be really interesting this next time.
Okay, we have just a minute left, but you've got savvy in this that most of us do not have. How quickly do the new boys and girls that show up in Montgomery get brought into one camp or another? You know, how long do they say, I'm up here and I'm going to change things? How long before somebody goes, they're there, here's how it's done?
Well, I tell you that the lobbyists are already working. The lobbyists have been working since the day they signed up to run on the ballot to sort of bring them into their camp. And that's their job, you know, to mm-hmm. tell them about the issues that are important to them. You know, I've seen people come to Montgomery with a head full of steam saying, you know, they're going to change everything about it. And some succeed, some don't. Some that do get the changes they want are hated because of it. But, you know, some are loved because of it. But look, the process is always pretty much the same. The process is not really broken. It's just the people that come in and the different ways they see the world. So I think it's got to be a little bit of both. You've got to want to shake things up, but you've also got to be willing to compromise, to play ball, to, you know, kind of get things done and not just completely say no all the time. And generally, it takes a few months for the new guys to figure out how to make that balance.
There it is. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. And once again, people can sign up for the email there on the website, right?
Right, aldailynews.com. Glad to have you, or appreciate you having me on, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time.
Absolutely. Get you back on very, very soon. Always fun to talk to Todd. All right, coming up next, look at there. Mike and Stu are here. The guys from Sip and Jew. I may get them on next hour with us as well if I can. I know they're here doing something else, but try to get them on coming up next hour. A lot of big food. The World Championship, Cooking Championship, is in Orange Beach in November. Like the whole, the big one. The big one. See if I can prime into talking about that and a whole lot more. Next hour, coming right back, more Midday Mobile. This is FM Talk 106.5, online at fmtalk1065.com. And if you had problems with the stream this morning, it was our, believe it or not, nothing to do here locally, our West Coast streaming provider. And obviously they woke up and had their hand-ground coffee, and now things are working. So check us out online, fmtalk1065.com, for streaming and tune-in radio.